Bonjour, Hunty. Recorded.
Hello, hello.
Hello,
how
my
are you
friend.
Doing?
I'm doing very good, thanks.
Nice, great to hear your voice. Well, as you know, this call, well, this is Michel Lorrain speaking, and I'm with Shihan Anthony Davino, and we will be having a conversation, an interview, and on you know, the purpose of this is to share Shihan's experience with other Shoryu practitioners around the world for hopefully for generation to come, you know, in order to preserve our style. And I think one way to do so is to share your stories, you know, and talk about, you know, how you first started and that kind of thing. So the interview will be saved in the World Alliance of Shoryu Karate Do website. And so, yeah, so I think that, you know, the first thing I'd like to, if it's all right with you, I'd like to talk about when did you first started your first Shoryu class? How was it? And, you know, who was your sensei? And
excuse me.
How did he teach?
Well, let me first say that I went to your site last night because I was interested to see where this was going. And it looks like a very good beginning. I saw Hunchy Donovan and some of the folks that I've seen in the past in Scientific Karate Do. So it was very a good place to begin. In terms of my training, my actual training started in 1964. I was playing in a rock band in college, and the drummer in my band was on the judo team at Maritime College, and we were playing in some clubs that were very tough, and some fights would break out, and I was a college wrestler, so he said, you know, you'd be a great martial artist. So he had also studied Taekwondo, so I started to train with judo with him, and then we met a Korean who showed up at our college straight from Korea, and we were training real pure Taekwondo with him. And then when I graduated in 1969, I started to teach art, and I was head of the art department at Comac High School, and I wanted to get back into the training because we all had seen Bruce Lee, and his fluidity and his dynamic qualities were just so striking. We all wanted to do that, you know, but I started to go to dojos, and it was a lot of the robot, very hard style, very traditional in terms of everybody had to do everything the same way. And it just wasn't what I was interested in. So one night I was driving down the road with my then girlfriend, and we passed the dojo and we saw all of the windows were fogged up. And I said, gee, let's go see what they're doing, you know. And we went in, and one of the senpais was leading the warm-ups, and out of the dressing room came this very lean, mean, rather tall Japanese sensei, and he started doing these crescent kicks on this 80-pound bag. It was flying, and then his movement was like the air. It was like just incredible, and he was doing these hammer fists on the bag, making it fly, and I said, that's it, man. I want to do what that guy is doing. So I approached him, and I said, yeah, I would like to come and be a student. And so I went home, and I actually trained myself for about a month to get back into shape. And, you know, when I first went to the first class, it turned out there was a young lady waiting for me outside the dojo, and I was really nervous about my first day in class. And she came up to me, and she said, would you braid my hair? And I said, what? You want me to braid you? So I said, no, just thank you, just stay away. But I started class, and, you know, it was just exactly as a wrestler, you know, I learned that conditioning is everything. And, you know, I never went out on the mat unless I was in good shape. And, you know, Sensei Morita, I had actually seen them at the World's Fair in 1964. I was a high school wrestler, went to see them. And little did I know, I would run into the same man 20 years later. So his approach was much like ours. You know, we did about 45 minutes to an hour, very heavy conditioning. You know, we did our meditation first. Then we went into Kihon, eventually Kumite, and Shiai. And actually, he allowed me to do Shiai within the first week or two because I had 3 years of experience behind me. But this was something totally new because, you know, the Shorinji Ryu approach is that each person is different. Their physical makeup is different. Their mentality is different. So the style is adaptable to that you can use it as it suits you. So that was really a different approach, you know, that I had seen in other dojos before, where everybody's foot had to be this way and everybody had to do this all the same way. So it was much more dynamic, much more realistic. You know, the whole idea of full contact fighting with BOGU was something really new. And, you know, in those days, it was like a black motorcycle helmet on your chest, you know. And I said, you guys are going to hit this with your hands and feet. So we did a lot of conditioning. And, you know, Marita-san is also an artist like I am. So we did the conditioning and the training in a more moderate, sensible way. You know, through the years, I ran into senseis that had that God mentality where, you know, that I say, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. And, you know, we took it a little bit more into the future in that we were, you know, thinking martial artists, that we, if it didn't make sense, we addressed it, you know, things like that.
Wow, that's great. So how long were the classes with Sensei Morita?
Well, when I started, it was 1973. And there was a dojo in every little shopping center because they didn't have the big insurance problems and all of the rest of the worry about injuries and things like that. And it was a two-hour class. We were training four times a week. We all wanted to be Bruce Lee. We all wanted to be that guy. And we had about seven or eight guys all in their 20s, all trying to be the best guy in the dojo. And we were always injured. We were always, it was never a time that we were practicing where something wasn't hurt or broken or something like that, you know. So we were practicing four times a week, which, you know, I couldn't get enough of it, you know. And you know, through the years, I tried to instill that into my students, you know, like we can't instill that kind of enthusiasm. They have to bring it with them. But I always led by example. I figured that was the best way to teach, was to be the walking example. And it also kept me in shape. So that's through the years, I always maintained that. And, you know, that was our beginning.
That's great. I mean, and which kata or communities, you know, what was the curriculum at the time?
Which ones were we working on?
Yes, with Sensei Morita.
Yeah, well, I think initially, it was Monday, Wednesday were traditional classes. Friday was fight night. And then Saturday morning in the dojo was the tough one because there was no heat in the dojo. We'd go down to the basement and try to get warm. We would do laps on the ice cold mat to try to get our feet warmed up. And that Saturday, you know, we were always beat up from the week before that. But in kata, initially we started with Naihanshin kata because I think that he felt that the Sanshin kata, which should have been probably the first kata as it exists in most other karate styles, didn't have the kind of reinforcement that Naihanshin had. Naihanshin has some beautiful movements. It's an attractive kind of form. So it's something that was grabbed the attention of a new student. So we started with Sanshin. We went to Naihanshin after that. And then Nujushiho followed that. And at the same time, we would alternate, you know, between Mondays and Wednesdays. Usually all the classes were sort of the basic format where we did the meditation, we did the warm-ups, the conditioning, then we did our kihon, we did our tachikata, we did our movement pad, taisabaki, ashiwas, all that stuff. And then we'd go into kumite and kata. And then ultimately at the end of the class, we would usually do some shiai. But as I said, Friday night was more shiai and less of the other things.
And when you did the shiai, did you use the bogus?
I think our favorite in class was with nothing. You know, we always felt that that's what you're going to be doing in real life, is you're not going to be wearing anything. But we practiced in all different ways. We practiced with the BOGU. You know, at that point, safety gear was just coming out, you know, the hand and foot protectors. And we would use them. We would use the shin protectors in class just so that we didn't get too beat up during the week clashing shins and banging into each other. But, you know, Marita-san was the greatest example because when you did shihai with him, it was like fighting with the air, you know. And, you know, when I see the beginners at the tournaments and they're clashing and they're bashing into each other. So as a sensei, through the years, when I'd have new students, I would wait about a month or so before I would shihai with them because they would hit you by accident like that. Even when you were just drilling, they'd hit you by accident.
Yeah, cool. And you talk a lot about you guys did the meditation. How long did you do that at the beginning of the class?
Zazen at the beginning was a few minutes. It wasn't anything took a long period of time. There were other periods where we did that just as a separate part of the story, you know, and each of us tried to practice. We all had the idea that we should be practicing at home as much as we did, if not more than in class, you know, and I've also worked with my students through the years to get them to understand that we all need supplemental training, strength training, conditioning training, road work, things like that, jumping rope, you know, and as I said, my wrestling background gave me that kind of attitude.
Yeah. In the warm-up conditioning, did you emphasize more on cardio, push-up abs or stretching, or was all well balanced?
Well, you know, it's interesting because in my years of teaching, I coached wrestling for a year, and I used the warm-up that we did in the dojo with my wrestlers, and I have guys from 50 years ago calling me and saying, I'm still doing knuckle push-ups, you know, like that. Basically, we followed the format in scientific karate do, and I think that's been the cornerstone of everything that I've ever done. You know, every time I go back to that book, as many times as I've read it, I always find something new, something that I didn't see. So if you were to look at scientific karate, we're doing basically what you see in the book, probably not as much, you know, some of the two-man exercises we would, you know, where the guy, you're doing your walking form with someone on your shoulders, or someone's holding your feet and you're walking on your hands, but it was basically an abbreviated version of what you'd see in scientific karate do, and basically it's a very logical approach, which I love, which it starts at the top of your head, and you're doing your neck, you're doing your shoulders, you're doing your waist, things like that, you know, and then eventually you're on the floor doing the stretches on the floor. There was always the 50 knuckle push-ups. And we would do them on the hard floor. We would do them on the mat. We would, you know, every manner of push-up you can imagine. Again, my wrestling background, so to this day I still follow that same format. But I've actually increased it in my own teaching, where we do almost 45 minutes of that conditioning at the beginning. And usually, from what I've read in scientific karate do, that the average one-hour class, and I don't think too many people have one-hour classes, recommend 10 or 15 minutes of warming up before the class. So I take a little bit more time because, you know, I've taught my students it's not what happens at the beginning of the fight. You've got to be around at the end of the fight to finish, you know, so you need that conditioning. You know, in the two-hour classes, it takes up a lot of the time, but I think the investment is worth it, you know.
That's great. And if you recall a little bit the black belt test, could you talk to us about how was with Sensei Morita the black belt testing back then?
Well, you know, we had a unique situation. You know, Sensei Morita was, you know, I have much admiration for the guy. He came from Japan with Sataka to represent Japan at the World's Fair, and he stayed and became a graphic artist, an extremely successful graphic artist in Manhattan. He created the Japan Art Directors League, and he was displaying in Japan and a wonderful career. And at some point, he had to move away. The problem with the dojo and the finances became an issue, so we wound up working out at the gym in our apartment complex, which was great. We had saunas, we had the pool right outside the window, so it was a great place to work out, and they didn't charge us anything. So, you know, in those days, it was like $20 a month to train in karate for, you know, a couple of times a week. But he was leaving, so his plan was to get us to EQ, to brown belt, and then he was leaving. So we had no sensei. You know, I started in 73, so by about 76, 77, he was leaving. So, unfortunately, myself, Greg Warner, and Bill Mason, we were the three last original students of the original group. We stayed and trained each other. But in order to progress past brown belt, we had to travel to Baltimore. So there were really no black belt tests from Morita Sensei, because he moved to Connecticut, and eventually he's back in Japan now. So all of our clinics, all of our testing, which was brutal, happened at Baltimore under Kaicho. And those tests were beyond belief. Usually they were 1 or 2 day affairs. Usually we'd have to drive 5.5 hours from Long Island down to Baltimore, be there by 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, which meant we had to leave in the middle of the night to get there. And let me tell you, when you walked into those days, you saw like 60 or 70 very frightened, scared individuals, not knowing what the hell was going to happen that day. And, you know, his tests were, you know, he is the definitive example of Schrödinger Ryu. I don't think there's anybody on the planet that is ahead of this guy and what he does and his example. And he's still leading out there. He's leading by example. So, you know, in some cases he would make, you know, at the beginning of one day, he was sitting there and he came in with, you know, we didn't do a lot of Tom Shawari. You know, we concentrated on the Bogu and Makiwaras, which we had in the dojo. But he brings in a bunch of mats, had some students bring, and he brings in a dresser, like with drawers and, you know, like that you'd have in your bedroom. And we said, what the hell is that for? So, and then in comes a whole stack of breaking boards. And we said, what is he going to do with this stuff? So what he did was he put the mats against the wall, he put the dresser against the mats, and then he stood a board up on top of the dresser on its edge. And he said, all of you black, this was a black belt test, so we were all black belts at the time. He said, you're all black belts, you all have speed and power, but we're going to see who has the speed. The board is not being held by anything, so if you just hit with power, the board's going to fly away, it's going to hit the mat against the wall, and it won't break. So one of our assistant black belts, he was the assistant sensei in our dojo. He taught on Wednesday nights, Sensei Fred Marcus, who was a very dedicated individual, got up there. He did his breathing. He got in his stance. Bam, the board flew into the mat. He must have hit it four or five times. It wasn't breaking. So we're all looking at each other. And so what Kaicho said was, form another line, and one of the guys just held the board by its corner, and when you nodded, he'd let it go, and you'd have to hit it in the air to try to break it. So we had two lines, and if you didn't break it, you had to go on the back of the line. So we did that, and when I got up there, I just said, okay, I'm going through this board. I'm going to hit it as fast as I can. I was able to break it, so thank God, you know. But then he would do things like he'd make us go into a big circle, and he says, okay, Tony, lead Hineri Zuki. Do 30. Okay, so I did 30, and another guy did 30. We did that for like 15 minutes. So within the first 15 minutes, we were so tired, so dripping, and we still had five more hours to go. So it was like a real challenge to be able to dig deep as we went on through the day. There would be breaks during the day, you know, where he'd bring in some bananas or, you know, fruit just to revive us a little bit. But he would put us out there. He would have us do kumite. He, you know, everything. By the end of the day, we did everything that we knew, you know. And I think one of the most, if you're interested in, like, what some of the promotions were like, the most interesting one was we got there one morning and we're all sitting there. And, you know, Kaicho always had one or two of his students that he would groom to be the top fighters and the top representatives of his dojo. So he got his number one guy out there. And this guy's name was Steve Siegelman. And, you know, this was a promotion for upper rank, and I think I was a shodan at the time, you know, for black belt promotion. And he had Steve go out into the middle of the mat, and he said, okay, Steve, whatever you want to show me, you can show me. So we all looked at each other, and we said, what the hell is this going to be? So Steve didn't know what to do, so he did a kata, and then he stopped, and he looked at Kaicho, and Kaicho said, whatever you want to show me, Steve, you can show me. So I sort of got the idea that this was going to be a self-generated thing, that each person was going to have to figure out what they were going to do when they went out there, you know, and that this went on. Steve was out there for a long time, you know. So when it got to be my turn, I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do what I see in the book. I'm going to start by doing stances, and then I'm going to do Hoko, and then I'm going to do Taisabaki, and then I'm going to do some kata. And he was allowing us to bring people out onto the mat and be a partner to do kumite or something. So I practically did everything that I know, you know, all the katas, all the kumites that I knew. And then some of the other karateka saw what I did, and they sort of followed that pattern. So that was probably one of the most unique aspects of our testing. But the thing that people feared the most was not the fighting and not the kumites and not any of that stuff. It was the oral examination part, where we had to answer questions. Now, I'm a musician, and I'm used to being on a stage, and I'm a teacher, and that was my life in front of the group. So I didn't have any problem with that, you know, but other people really did. So, you know, and I would have to say that in my travels and to other dojos, there is no one that does what we do. You know, through the years, especially the 70s was, you know, every generation mm-hmm. had, you know, it was the kung fu of the 70s, you know, in the 60s it was judo. So at the time, kung fu was reigning supreme, and everybody's, oh, the Chinese systems, you know, they got it and all of this stuff. But as I went through the years and participated in the many tournaments, I got much more respect for what we do and the way we do it. You know, and I would say to out people out there that what I see, unfortunately, in dojos today is like kindergarten. And we're like college. We're like so far. I mean, you know that when we do our katas, we do the mirror image. Nobody does that out there. And same with our kumites. The level of development is incredible. You know, I went to a commercial school that's probably as close to what dojos used to be. And one of my student's sister was taking her brown belt test. So we walk in. The place is in pandemonium. The girl's sitting on the mat. All of her friends are around her on the mat, drinking soda, eating ice cream on the mat. She gets up, she did one self-defense move, she answered one question, that was her brown belt test, you're a brown belt now, see you later, go home, you know, so a world of difference, Michelle.
Yes, no, I understand. Wow, that's great. I mean, it's great experience, great stories. I'd like to ask you if you have any, like, you know, we all have stories, I guess, you know, how something that happened through your years of practice with Saint Samarita, or if he ever told you stories about his training with, you know, in Japan. So I'd like that, if you have any stories.
Well, you know, he said there were things that he told us. You know, he said that when they were in Japan, he's a tall guy for a Japanese guy. You know, he's about 5'10 or something like that. And he said that they were, you know, they had that mentality that they were gods, that they were like untouchable guys. So he said they would go on the subways in their traditional kimonos, wearing their wooden clogs and stuff like that. And they would walk through the subways, and if they saw somebody smoking cigarettes, they would pull the cigarette out of his mouth and say, you know, you shouldn't be smoking here, and things mm-hmm. like that. And he also told me that while he was wearing his traditional kimono, I guess some thug thought that he was going to be an easy mark. And the guy tried to attack him, and Morita-san did a mawashigeti to the guy's side of his head with those wooden clogs on. And that was the last he heard about that, you know. Morita-san was a very different kind of sensei. You know, he was just a couple of years older than us. And when he was on the mat, it was like he was a tough guy. He was a scary dude. But off the mat, he was like one of the guys, you know, and that sort of, not that it got me in trouble, but it wasn't like some of the senseis, you know. He was tough as nails, but he was a nice guy. And through the years, I've seen some of senseis in our group and in other groups where they turn that toughness into a nastiness. They become mean. And he actually said to me, he said, you know, the Japanese are very sadistic people. You know, we all heard the stories about the bamboo sticks, getting hit with bamboo sticks when you're doing stance training and stuff like that. So I had difficulty through the years dealing with some of the senseis that took this I'm God attitude, and you're nothing but a slave. And I can remember going to clinics and things like that, where they were using the students like guinea pigs, like, you know, what can we do to these guys today? What can we have them do, you know? And we had a different attitude about that. And, you know, we always did the logical things, you know. And, you know, one of the problems that we had a lot in going to Baltimore was that Kaicho was not a person that liked to be in front of the group to speak, and his English was not very good. So, unfortunately, there were many, many times, practically every clinic or test that we went to, where he would say something and nobody could either hear or understand him, but we didn't want to be rude or disrespectful. So we would look to Sensei Christus, and she was more or less the interpreter. She would say, well, he meant this, and boy, it just wasted so much time. And I said, you know, there's a better way to do this, you know, and that's, I guess, my teacher attitude, and that sometimes you know, got me into situations that weren't great. You know, like I can remember being at a clinic, and Kaicho would always like to sometimes bring out a little kid to lead the warm-ups, you know, which was cute and that's interesting. But now I'm old, especially, you know, the kid got out there and he started doing full splits right off the bat, you know, and now, you know, like, you know, one of my greatest fears as a student was that somebody was going to ask me to do something that I couldn't do, you know, like whatever it was, you know, and that was always, you know, what are they going to have us do today? So when I became a sensei, I said, well, you know what? I'm the guy in the front of the room. If I don't want to do it, I don't have to do it. You know, so it sort of took the pressure off that. And I'm sure you've been to clinics and things where you see the students war, and then in the back of the room are the senseis and they're warming up on their own and they're getting their old bodies, you know, to shape up like that, you know.
Yes. No, that's great. And then, so just again, just curious because, you know, did he ever mention anything about his training? How was his training with Sensei Zadaka in Japan back?
Yes. Yeah, it's like a movie, Michelle. He and Morita and Hisataka Masayuki were the two best students, according to Morita-san, and I think he told me that the Kenkokan school meant the Blue Sky School because their dojo was actually outdoors, so the Blue Sky School. And he said that what they did was they went out behind the school and there was the wall. He said there was the wall. I said, well, what wall is that? He said it was the wall where we punched the wall until we broke the two knuckles of our fist. And then once they recalcified, they became very big, but you know, we've all seen pictures of Masayama's hands and some of those guys, they look like feet, you know, and they all, you know, one of the first things they said to me was, yeah, all the black belts are crippled. And I said, well, that's not good, you know. And since Morita was an artist as well, you know, he told me that story about how they broke their knuckles. So we didn't do anything at all crazy like that. Anyway, he and Hisataka were the two best students. And they chose to send them to America to represent Japan at the World's Fair in 64. And as I said, I got to see them, and it was just great to see that, you know. I had seen one other martial demonstration as a wrestler. But then it became like this movie where Morita said, we're going to be breaking away from Hisataka and the group. This was in 1973 when I first started, and the fair was in 64. He said, because we're sending them money every month, and they want all the money. And that became the crux of the negativity, that they were just concerned about getting money from us. And then they were angry at Morita because they said, well, we brought you to America, and we you know, got you to go there, and now you're going to stay there. And they didn't like that he was going to stay. So he and Hisataka had a big split at that point. And I wouldn't say they were deadly enemies, but there was no love between them at any point. And that's when we started to train with Kaicho. And actually, Morita was traveling. He was an amazingly dedicated individual. As an example for us, he was just amazing. We lived in Port Jefferson. And it was about a two-hour to Lord knows how long to commute to Manhattan every day. He had this little Honda that he would get up at 5 in the morning, whatever it was. He would commute to Manhattan 2 hours one way and then come back 2 hours another way. And then he would show up at the dojo at about 9 o'clock at night. Now, usually we would start class at 7, and we'd be in the club room of our apartment workout, and we'd be hitting the point where we'd be on the floor doing the leg raises, and we'd hear the door open. And one of the guys was, is it him? And we'd say, yep, it's him. Does he have his gi? Because sometimes he'd be too tired to work out. So he would show up and he said, you know, I had a busy day, I'm going home. But if he had his gi, we knew that whatever we were doing, it was going to get kicked up a whole lot of notches once he got on the mat, because he just had that level of this high level of intensity. So, you know, he was some example, and he did that for all the first 3 years that we were there. He had a little rooftop apartment over his office in Manhattan where he would sleep over at some points. But, man, the guy worked his ass off, and now he's a rich guy. And actually, I just saw him and his family are living in Hawaii on the beach at the moment. You know, he's in Japan most of the time, but I think his daughter is in California, and she's in the theater. So I think they were all together in Hawaii having a good time.
Well, that's wonderful. I will definitely try to talk with him and hopefully
he's
be
very
able
accessible.
to.
He's a very good guy.
Yeah.
He, you know, I even told him, I said,
That's
"You're
great.
not as mean as you look," because he definitely was a formidable looking dude.
Well, it's so nice of you to take the time to share your stories and experience with us. And I think what's great is, you know, I want to share that the last Shenzhen tournament, I was judging and you performed a kata. It was amazing. And I think that's a great inspiration and great example to see, you know, to see you still performing and training. And that's wonderful. And that's the true spirit of Shunjiru in martial arts.
Well,
and
I really appreciated that, Michelle. Let me just interject there, because you and Sensei Larry are two of the best examples of Shunjiru that I would always tell my students to look at you guys, because you are such great examples. So to have you two come over and say that to me, I was really honored to have you guys say that.
Well, I just, you know, that's how I feel about it. And also, you're still teaching, right?
Yes, I teach twice a week.
Nice. Okay, so, well, that's wonderful. Well, you know, again, I want to say thank you very much for this wonderful interview experience. And thank you very much also for all the videos and photos that you sent me. And soon they will be in the website. You know, it's still a lot of work that we need to do, but we're heading in the right direction. And then so we'll have all those nice, wonderful interviews that students will be able to listen to and know, learn more about the
for
history.
Posterity, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And know about the people like you and who was there before them, you know, and for generations to come. Well, thank
Absolutely.
You so much. And,
Good
and have a
much
wonderful
day, Sensei.
Thank you
and
so much.
And you have a great day. It was wonderful talking to you.
Hey, take
enjoy.
Care.
And
Bye-bye.
Enjoy your new addition to your family.
I sure will. Thank you.
And as I come across other things, I'll send them your way.
I appreciate that. Take care.
Have a good day, brother. Good talking to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.